Great to see you all this morning. If you missed it earlier, I introduced myself. My name is Dan, and honored to serve as pastor here. It's a thrill of a lifetime to be the senior pastor. By senior, I don't mean old. I mean lead. And it's the challenge of a lifetime. It really is. But it's a joy. I thank God every day. And a responsibility like this to lead and to lead with vision is very, very significant. It's a primary tool by which God helps a leader remain humble. And I'm very humbled to serve and love and care for you all. We have a church app that has some notes that you can follow along. You might have gotten a handout at the door when you came in today to follow along. If you would like to keep digital notes and email them to yourself or to someone else, you can go to our church app. There's a tab called Messages. So today's Vision Sunday, so I get the thrill of helping you to picture what we're picturing for our future. And I'd love to start by asking you guys a couple of questions, okay? And asking you for a response. Wave or raise your hand if you've ever moved in your lifetime, you moved from an apartment to a home. Raise your hand if you've ever moved from an apartment to a home. And everybody said, amen for that. If you haven't lived in a Solve apartment here as a Syracuse citizen, you are not officially a resident of Syracuse. If you didn't start there, Solve Electric, if you didn't start there, you have to reapply for citizenship. That's the truth, hashtag truth. Raise your hand, wave at me if you've ever left one steady job for a bigger and better job. You launched out. Raise your hand if you have ever purposefully lost more than 10 pounds. Raise your hand. Keep your hand up if you gained it all back. No, I'm just kidding, don't do that. Raise your hand if you've ever moved away from your hometown. Raise your hand, last one, raise your hand if you decided, you and your spouse, you decided to have children to start a family. Raise your hand. Here's why I want to know this. Because there is something that motivated you to do what it took to leave where you were and what you were doing for something different. Something motivated you to do that. How many of you by nature are more naturally or normally the kind of people who prefer to leave things the same? Raise your hand if you're kind of a leave things the same person. Anybody get instinctively mad at someone who doesn't leave things the same? Anyone married to somebody who purposefully tries to ruin your life by not leaving things the same? What would cause somebody to leave, to have everything stable, leave everything, to violate their instinct to leave things the way they are? I have a word for you that I think drives people to do this. It's called vision. It's vision. And here's what I mean by that. You'll see this on the slide behind me. Vision is a clear mental picture. So and here's what the mental picture does. It's a picture of what could be. It is fueled by the conviction that it ought to be. So when you're thinking about the things you did to change your life and to disrupt what was normally happening in your life, what caused you to do things that you normally wouldn't do in exchange for playing it safe, here's what I say. You had a picture in your mind that your new home would be better than your apartment. You had a picture in your mind that there was something waiting for you in another town, so you left your hometown. Some of you had a picture in your mind that you needed, wanted, and desired a family, so you decided to start a family. Some of you pictured your new body minus 10 pounds, and it drove you to lose 10 pounds. So the picture that you have in your mind is called a vision, and the conviction to help that vision happen is that you begin to believe this ought to be this way. It ought to be different than it is. So what we're going to cover today is a clear mental picture of what could be, and we're going to fuel that in the next year by the conviction that it should be that way. So Vision Sunday is not a list of the methods that explain how we're going to do it. It's not a list that is a plan for success. Also, Vision Sunday is not a to-do list of all the things we're going to do to help it happen. Rather, what I'm going to try to do is paint a picture of what it could be. and ask you to consider the possibility that this is the way it ought to be. This is what we ought to be doing. A picture of what could be. It's a preferred future, and it is a possible impact that we could experience together. So overall, our vision is stated this way. You've heard me say it in the past couple weeks if you've been around here. It is to see gospel transformation in every heart, every home, and neighborhood. Now, if you don't think this is a big task, circle the word every. Every heart, every home, and every neighborhood. And the reason is because when we think about what God envisions for our local church, we don't believe that God envisions some people experience gospel transformation in their heart and some in their home and some in their neighborhood. We really believe that God has a urgency and a passion to see every single heart, home, and neighborhood transformed by the gospel. And so that's what we envision. And this is a big task because it's every, and then add to that how big our neighborhood is. If you just pull together the four local suburbs contained here in our region, there are, according to statistics, 131,000 plus people. By the way, when you take these four suburbs and put them together, it is the largest population within the greater Syracuse area. So we are meeting every Sunday right in the middle of the largest concentration of people in the greater Syracuse area are right here in the town of Clay, Cicero, Salina, and North Syracuse. Those are big suburbs. That's a lot of people. 131,740 people, and we gather in between them all. I can't help but believe that we're positioned perfectly to be a gospel-sending, transformational body of believers. Not a group of people who is collecting people to build a kingdom here on Sundays, but a sending vehicle that is at work, like we saw in that video, strengthening and seeding the community with gospel transformation. So here's the problem. The problem is that statistics also tell us that here in the northeast part of the United States of America, we live among the most unreached people in the country. Very, very similar to the Pacific Northwest, the New England and northeast region that we live in, specifically the Boston, Massachusetts area, Albany, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse. We make up a large percentage of the country who's considered an unreached people group. But what does that mean? It means that less than 5% of the people report any real gospel transformation in their life. It means that they can be religious or come from religious background or have religious heritage, but they don't indicate anywhere that there's any real transformation or gospel change in their life. Less than 5%. The New York State... The list of unreached people groups, New York State fills the top 10 list in our country. Another group of researchers led by Tom Rainer did some research on what is it that causes most of the churches that are in decline or stagnated, what are the shared characteristics of stagnated and declining churches? And you know what they discovered? There's overlaps. There's 10 overlapping characteristics of churches that are steadily declining or have stagnated. And here's four of them. I wanted to read four of them. They all share this. There's an insufficient emphasis on smaller groups of people sharing their lives and loving each other. Also, there's an inward focus. The too many churches, Tom Rainer says, the emphasis is on me, myself, and I. Or in college, we used to say, us four and no more. That's it. That's our church growth strategy. Us four, no more. That some members are more concerned about the temperature in the worship center than the eternal destinations of their neighbors. The me-focused church is on its way to decline, and they would describe as the average church suffering from inward focus. Also, no clearly defined process of disciple-making or growth. Kind of hope that people are growing in their faith, but there's no real discernible process for that to happen. And fourthly, no strategic plan for multiple campuses, for being multiplying oneself or being one church but in many different locations in town. If there's no strategic plan, many of those churches are in the decline list. So we have a solution, though. We believe, much like the one of the significant church leaders in our country, Bill Hybels, that indeed God has provided a hope for the world, that it's a thriving local church. We don't believe it's televangelists. We don't believe it's pamphlets and literature. We don't believe that it's Bible colleges. We believe it's the local church. A thriving local church is the hope of the world. And right here in North Central New York, if there's a thriving local church family, we believe that's a part of God's solution to reach and to see gospel transformation. So you'll notice here that there is a graph. Let me tell you what that graph is. Last year, we had two church health surveys. We had one at the beginning and one at the end. And after the second one, we were able to see what we could expect on Sunday morning in attendance if, in 3 years, if we had implemented the things that we had learned after taking the first church health survey. So we got our first results back, and we were tasked with a bunch of things to help increase our church health. And we took another survey which says that you've actually improved in your church health. And if you just keep doing what you've been doing, then you have a 3-year growth trajectory of 500 people who would be attending on Sunday mornings. Wouldn't that be great? Let me tell you what I think is better. Not just increased church participation, but within participation is discernible and identifiable transformation. That there isn't a group of people who are getting more energized about participating on Sundays, because haven't you seen auditoriums full of people? There's no real guarantee of any real life change. You can fill an auditorium with people. It doesn't indicate that there's transformation. And our vision is not to see every person participating. Our vision to see every person changed. Not just taking action and being active, but instead experiencing a transaction with God where there's saving faith and there's maturity and disciple-making life change. And so what we envision is not more people gathered. What we envision is more people making disciples and more people sent to be a part of God's plan to help redeem North Central New York. So we envision more than just more people attending here in the North Central Church family worship on Sunday mornings. Instead, it's to see hearts transformed, homes transformed, and neighborhoods transformed. How is that going to happen? By Jesus saturation. What that means is we see the Spirit of God changing hearts of our friends, families, coworkers, classmates, and teammates, and we're a part of what he's doing. Jesus is filling every place with his presence through the normal everyday people who are involved in everyday stuff of life, and we become a part of it. So let me tell you the specifics. Here's what I mean specifically. Here's what we envision. Two things. I have my glasses off. Okay, yeah, that's two. Two things that we envision. We envision every generation in a missional community. Every generation. One of the real life-changing experiences for me was to be a part of a church family. It happened to be this church family when I was a teenager. This was my home church. And I remember more than enough occasions where some kind of life change was came about or was the fruit of the investments that another generation had invested in me, that an older man had taken a loving interest in my life, had spent time with me and had cared for me, and then eventually I found that it was transformational. It's a part of our vision that multiple generations would be together, help each other, love each other, and take care of each other. We don't have an urgent, passionate vision to segregate the 20-somethings and then have the 30-somethings together and young families together and then aging adults together and then retired people in another segment, and they eventually see each other on Sundays and wink at each other or wave or try to be polite to one another. Rather, we have a vision that they would be sharing life together, that they would be helping one another, loving and caring for one another, investing in one another, no matter what age you are. Funny story, a couple of weeks ago, I love my wife, she's an absolute flower. She's a gem. But the other day, she was telling me about a story where she said to someone, they asked me how old I was, and I said, I'm 46, and then we got talking, and then she stops for a second, and she looks at me, and she goes, 46, I'm 46, right? And I said, yeah, of course, if I'm 45, you're 46, so that would make, wait, hold on a second. And do you know what we had to do for the next 5 minutes? We had to run the math. We had to go back to her date of birth and try to track down how long that would be till now and compared to what my age is, and we discovered she's not 46. She's 47 years old. I'm still 45. That didn't change. We got that right. But here's what we discovered. At a certain age, you kind of forget how old you are. And I also think it's true. Don't you stop caring, too? Eventually, you're like, who cares? What's the difference? 45, 46, 47, not really counting. So as my wife ages, I want her around younger people to share her life. I want to make sure that younger people are able to benefit from her aging wisdom. It is a part of what we picture, and what this means is that we could be using smaller groups for multi-generational meetings and gatherings to fill our hearts, homes, and neighborhoods with gospel saturation. What does that mean? What does this mean for our time? Because when I think about adding groups, small groups of people getting together, anybody else feel like, where in the world am I going to fit that in? How am I going to have time for that? Where is this going to go in my schedule if I'm already doing this, that, the other thing? Here's what we believe. If all we do is celebrate and serve corporately on Sunday mornings and love each other and the world in a weekday missional community family, we believe that's enough. We believe that's enough for disciple making and transformational living. So we invited you to participate in a missional community last week. And based on the cards that were turned into us that came back expressing an interest in our initial stages of training, we had 67 people say, I want to be a part of learning what that is. By the way, if you want to learn more about it and you weren't here last week and you'd like to get the invite to our boot camp training, we want to tell you more about it, you can fill out one of these cards. It should be on a seat near you. There's a handful of them out there. If someone has one and you want it, just take it from them and dare them to take it back. So fill this out. We've got a green missional community bucket. We'd love to have you put your name in there, and then we'll email you some information about how we're going to get started right away doing some boot camp training. This is where we'll get you together and train you and release you and your small group to make disciples who make disciples in the everyday rhythms of life. Not something extra, not something more. Everyday life is the program. Not adding something to your life. Rather, here's what we're going to do. We're going to inject intentionality into the rhythms and routines that you already have. You already do many things together, at least six things, and we want to inject intentionality into those things. So what we'll do is replace some of the low-impact spiritual activities that we're involved in, perhaps some of the weekday programming that's with something more deeply transformational, gathering and leading small groups of people who inject gospel intentionality into the six rhythms of their life and who meet consistently. And you've got this in your notes, actually. You'll see it up here. Missional communities are a consistent gathering of people from varying generations and spiritual maturity levels who eat, celebrate, listen, tell stories, and recreate. That means recreation and make stuff. Rest and do things together. And bless one another and their neighbors. And this is how we would saturate your hearts, homes, and neighborhoods with gospel transformation. Now, if you have been around the traditional church long enough, you know that on Wednesday nights, we invite all of the church family to come. And when you get here, we split you up by age and gender and send you to a room where we have someone else teach you or someone else's parents teach the kids. And then we call it family night, where you come and we separate, divide, and then conquer. Now, imagine what could occur if instead of that kind of family night, we transition to spending more time families with families, multiple generations with multiple generations. We bring your two worlds together of your church life and your everyday life, and we add intentionality, and we do more disciple-making and less programming in our weekly church life. And then we get to invite non-believing friends, neighbors, coworkers, and classmates into our homes and experience our loving community with us and share life with them before they even believe. We believe that's possible. We believe that it works. We know where people are helping bring transformation within their own city, specifically in the Pacific Northwest and also in many other regions by doing this very same thing. We have a comfortable and natural way through missional communities to give and receive more care for each other. So when this is thriving, you can see it. And some of the things that'll change are very, very specific. It's our honor to have a family with us who suffered a loss this weekend. Tammy and Sonia lost their brother Troy in suddenly this weekend. And our hearts go out to you guys. We'll be calling hours will be this afternoon, and then we'll be celebrating his life and remembering Troy tomorrow at 11 a.m. But when missional, listen to this, when missional communities are thriving, I don't have to, and you don't have to do the good thing, which is to email the whole church family and say, would you be willing to prepare meals and tender loving care to this family who just suffered a loss, and then hope that people are willing to spend their time and energy serving someone they don't know. We want to do the better thing, which is we know right away that the Collinses and the Millers and others who love Troy are already in a missional community, and that community is visiting them, that community is at the hospital, that community is at the funeral home, that community, was I saying committee? I hope not. That community was investing TLC into their families, and they weren't depending on strangers to respond to an email. Instead, they were taking care of someone that they love. We have so many examples. I mean, we are, North Central Church this past couple months has turned into a baby factory. If you don't want children, then run away. It's happening. I don't care what age you are. I'm just kidding. That being said, we should also be sensitive to those of you who are trying to have kids and you cannot. And of course, we're mindful of how frustrating that can be. But I can't tell you what a thrill it would be to do something better than emailing out a meal sign-up link to people to prepare meals for a stranger. My vision and what we're passionate about is every time someone has a baby, they're already in a missional community who's providing the TLC, the meals, the support, and the care already. And they're not hoping and praying that somebody will respond to a generic email from the office or from a ministry coordinator and hope that we'll have enough people. By the way, if you're somebody who's preparing meals, wouldn't it be, I mean, I've experienced this. Some of you who like to prepare meals and you get these emails and you say, oh, wow, it seems like I just keep cooking and cooking and cooking for these people having babies and people who are experiencing grief and tragedy who need meals. I don't know who these people are, but it seems like I'm cooking a lot. Wouldn't it be great to be in a community and you cook for your community and they cook for you, and someone else over there, when they're in need, their community's cooking meals for them, and vice versa. And you know each other, and it's an expression of your love, not just a donation to the church family. I love that idea. We picture that idea. And then you're not cooking for everyone. You're cooking for the people in your missional community to support them with some TLC. Then there's some people who would say, Pastor, over time I've been attending North Central on a Sunday, and it's very difficult to connect with anyone on Sundays. I would volunteer, but it's hard to think about volunteering on my own and volunteering alone. And with the missional community model of disciple making, it is possible for parts of your entire missional community to serve together. How many of you love that coffee in between services on Sunday morning? Some of you love it so much, you told me if it's not out there on a Sunday, you go to another church. I can't believe that's true, but I'm kidding. Nobody said that yet, but I see it in your eyes. I do. But do you know that we depend on just a handful of people to generate all of that for all of you every Sunday? And they tell me that some of the reaction that they get from our church family when the coffee is a little slow going out or it's not ready soon enough in the early service, they say, man, people are possessed by like caffeine demons and stuff. And what we envision is that there's handfuls of people from missional communities on Sundays who are serving together, and they're working as a team. How about this? How about when it's time to sign up for a foreign missions trip, we have not just individuals trying to figure out if they're going to join the team. We have entire missional communities leaving the country and serving together side by side, flying together, serving together, caring for orphans together, feeding the hungry together, and then coming back and sharing that in their own missional community together, building their lives around community and building their lives around being outward and sent to work together side by side. There's so many examples that we could go on and describe, but I want you to get a feel for what it could be like. And also, a missional community, you'll see this behind me too, reaches every North Central New York region and beyond that we have represented in our church family. You'll notice that this is what it could look like. It could look like neighborhoods with thriving missional communities that are at work connecting and caring for people who don't yet know who Jesus is. Multiplying our reach into the North Central New York neighborhoods and beyond. Okay, so if you want more information about being a part of one of those, we're going to train our church family in a boot camp series. You can fill out one of these cards, mark it down. We want to connect you into a missional community and train you how to become one. And we're going to do our best to get you trained up and get you launched. Secondly, and lastly, we envision something else in 2017. We envision every building as a bridge to our neighbors. I thank God for a church building. If you read the New Testament, here's what you're going to discover. God doesn't need church buildings to reach the world, because the church is a people, and we're fortunate enough to have a building, but the vision that we have is that the buildings that we have will become bridges of trust that we build into our community. Bridges of trust, that we are able to use our building, our space, the construction that we already have and the new construction that we may have in the future, that it becomes a part of the tools that we use to deepen the trust with our school district leadership, our school district families, our neighbors, and beyond. The current space that we have is already being used to build bridges. You may have come across this. You were invited to, and we look forward to re-inviting you to the postponed water baptism of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, FCA, which is a chapter on the Syracuse University campus, and we have the privilege of hosting the water baptism for the athletes who are new believers that play for the Syracuse University Orange. And we will host them here, and we'll build a bridge of trust with the university and those athletes. Also, we support local agencies who are already using our space to do training and professional development, like Liverpool School District meets here and they train their teachers. I can't tell you what an honor and a thrill to open our hospitable arms and embrace them and say, you're welcome to use our space as we build bridges of trust with them. And also, let me show you what I mean. You see that space, that's our training space. We have hosted funerals, trainings, network meetings, leadership development, and so on in that space, along with what we do on Sundays to make it adequately multi-purpose. You'll see here an example of what we use it for, which is a leadership training day. It was a simulcast from an organization called Catalyst Leadership. We've also hosted Liverpool Central Schools for a training day in there and also in our entire building, lobby, every square inch. And recently we had the Prevention Network, who has settled in to use our space for their local meetings. In fact, the state director had a conversation with Pastor Jonathan and said, listen, I want to tell you something. When they were meeting here, they were over in the multi-space. They said, when my local director here in Syracuse told us that they had finally found a meeting place and they were going to be meeting in a church, I kind of cringed. I'm not sure that's going to be a good thing. And she went on to say, but I got here and I saw how clean and modern and well-equipped it was to do exactly what we were doing. She said, it's perfect. It's perfect for what we needed. And I got so for us, though she was hesitant, we believe that we're now able to build a bridge of trust with our community to start to expand our gospel connection. Also, one of our highlights is that Downland Drive has been holding their PTO has been holding their daddy-daughter ball here, and you'll see a daddy and a daughter, and also some of these little daughters having the time of their life as we, again, open our facility. And rather than securing it as a sacred space, we believe that the love and hospitality and the winsomeness of inviting them into our space helps to do something even more sacred, which is to build trust with our community. So we're so grateful for the way God has used our space to do that. Family, students, PTO, faculty, staff, and we look forward to more and more opportunities to do that. So how do we help transform the neighborhood? We believe that it comes by using every building we have as a bridge to our neighbors. So what do the families of suburban neighborhoods need? I had the privilege of speaking with the acting superintendent, I should say it this way, the active assistant superintendent of the Liverpool Central School District, and I was able to ask him this question: what does the suburbs need? By the way, if you have a church in the city, some of the needs are more obvious. Some of the needs are more evident. Some of the needs are in your face, and they're very, very specific. When you're in the suburbs, it's a different thing. I'm like, what do people need? If you're trying to be a church that's responsive to the needs of the community, what does a local church in the suburbs do? And so I asked the acting assistant superintendent, what do you need? And he said, the number one thing that everyone's talking about now in our school district and in Cicero, North Syracuse, it's the same. Here's what we need. We need professional and thriving before and after school daycare programming and pre-K programming. And he said, and it is the thing that we're all talking about that we need. And the reason that I was asking him was because we were working on this project here, which is primarily a kid's space. And this kid's space here, with the intention that it would be used not just to expand the capacity for growth in our North Central Church family on Sundays, but would become a bridge of trust into our neighborhoods, and that we would be a part of something special that God's doing to grow before and after school childcare, daycare, and pre-K in a way that not just, in fact, when I was with the acting assistant superintendent, he said, the next time we meet, let's get the administrators of CNS with us, because we're all doing the same thing, we're trying to accomplish the same thing, and we're facing the same challenges. And he said, worst case scenario is with a space like this, that we help you guys have a world-class pre-K and before and after school programming. That in this kind of a partnership, that we would help provide the leadership and the funding and the curriculum that's needed and the programming needed to have something that would help our neighborhood thrive. Love that idea. Love that idea. So new construction, if we had a premier building to meet this need through new construction, we can build and expand our capacity for future growth. On Sunday mornings, when we collect our kids all together and we teach them, in the last 5 years, we've seen a 51% increase in the number of kids. And if we go 5 more years and see another 50% increase, we need to expand our capacity to keep on growing and teaching kids so that the kids don't start running the asylum. More kids than adults. We expand our capacity. But secondly, and as a bridge to our neighbors, young families, and school districts, to build and deepen the trust of Donlin Drive Elementary for professional training events, Liverpool School District, CNS, pre-K, childcare, and beyond, where this is a dramatic investment into helping relieve the financial stress of single parents, low-income parents, and others who are trying to send their children to before and after school and pre-K, but given the opportunity to have a severely subsidized or discounted enrollment, would be able to keep working, send their kids to this kind of premier daycare, and get ahead financially and keep the momentum going. So let me tell you about this new construction. This new construction is currently drafted at 8,500 square feet of primarily kid space, including a secure entry and exit space. Very, very, very important. One entry, one exit, and it's secure. 1,000 square feet of whole group space, 1,000 square feet of nursery toddler suite. Also 10 classrooms, whole church bathrooms, brand new, used potentially by the whole church, an outdoor play area, and a senior pastor den of New York Yankee man cave space. Or Cowboys. The Lord hasn't really kind of identified exactly what he wants. Although with the way that Super Bowl went, I'm beginning to believe that it's possible that God's team is not the Cowboys, it's the Patriots. Strike that from the recording, but I don't want that to go public. I don't want that to go public, but there's no other explanation than it was a miracle. So in the future, this year, we expect to be providing informational meetings. We expect that the membership would come together and have the final vote on taking on the expense. We have already set aside quite a bit of money to help pay for new construction. If it's this, then the members will vote on the construction expenses, and we'll do that, God willing, later on in the year. And in the meantime, we have a check this little explanation out. Envision thriving missional communities and in our neighborhoods and permanent legacy building bridges of trust with our neighbors, it's going to require some things, obviously. Let me give you three of them. Here's what it's going to take: risk, it's going to take trust, and it's going to take sacrifice. The risk, of course, is failure. And I'm familiar with how it works. The leadership says we're going to do this. It doesn't work out quite right. We don't do this. Leadership says the next time we're going to do this. It doesn't work out quite right. And then the next time the leader comes through and says, here's what we're going to do, it's natural to say, well, probably not. It does take some trust that it does take some risk in moving ahead and facing failure, and also the discomfort of change. By the way, if our founding church family, North Central Church, didn't take risks, you and I today, right now, would be down in that little white chapel church on the corner of Wetzel and Morgan because the church leadership was unwilling to take the risk of moving here to this property and then eventually building this space here. All risky. All on the line for something that we're not sure of until it happens. So we recognize that there is risk. But let me tell you about a greater risk that I'm more concerned about. I'm more concerned about the risk of keeping everything the same. I'm more concerned about doing less to nothing so that there's more predictable peace. But I think that now is the time for us to surge ahead and build these bridges and to start training and equipping and sending thriving missional communities. Secondly, it's going to take trust in the leadership to discern and direct and to humbly lead with good stewardship and wisdom. Also, it's going to take some trust in God's faithful care for his church. Have you ever read in the Old Testament some of the knuckleheaded things that God's people did in the Old Testament? Can you even remember what some nations did to God's people? They crushed them, they enslaved them, they drove them into the ground, and they exiled them into all different portions. And what does God do? He faithfully tends to his people called the remnant. He gathers them again, and he says, no amount of your wickedness, no amount of wickedness of other pagan nations, nobody is going to have the final say over who you are and what you do, that's my say. And I believe this, that no matter what we do in the future, somehow God finds a way to tend to, oversee, protect, and provide for his church here at the North Central Church family. And he finds a way to begin things and stop things, to raise up leaders and bring leaders down. And I, for one, am inviting you to put your trust in God, his faithful care for his church, and the leaders he has directed and selected. Also, it's going to take sacrifice. At the very beginning, I said, wave at me if you've ever, whatever. A lot of what went into making those changes that you made, making those moves and making those decisions, was you being willing to sacrifice what you had for the possibility that you have something better in the end. It's my hope that you're willing to sacrifice with us. It will cost your personal time. It will cost your money. And in cases where you treasure your money above all else, it costs you your heart. And it will cost you in large quantities, it may cost you your traditions, the things that you're used to and comfortable with. But I believe that the best is yet to come in our North Central Church family. I believe that we're going to take a step forward and let God do some new, different things. Not better necessarily, but new and different. And challenge us, challenge our faith, challenge our grip on our own fears, challenge our grip on our own finances. But I want to do it together with you. I don't want to do it by ourselves. I don't want to do it despite the church family. I want to do it with and together.